This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. I have several guests today. Guy Timberlake, the American Small Business Coalition, Jaime Gracia of Civil Government Contracting, and Evan Weissel of Wilson Weissel Communications. Gentlemen, welcome.
Morning.
Mark, how's it going?
Good morning.
Jaime, you start. A little bit of background on you and Civil, please.
I'm Jaime Gracia, President and CEO of Civil Government Consulting. My business model is to help the government with acquisition and program management and to help the federal government be better stewards of taxpayer funding. Part of our portfolio is also training to complete that mission in addition to helping small businesses understand the environment of federal government and government contracting.
Okay. Evan?
Hi, Evan Weissel, principal and co-founder of Wells & Weissel Communications. We are an integrated communications firm, and what that means is we bring to our clients, which are business-to-business, business-to-government, business-to-consumer technology companies, an integrated approach to their communications programs, meaning traditional public relations, social media, content development, thought leadership programs, and go-to-market strategies.
Cool. Guy.
Mark, it's good to see you again. Mark, the American Small Business Coalition is a 9-year-old membership organization that my wife and I started with the focus of supporting the government contracting community. That means industry organizations, government organizations, with a very specific focus on supporting small companies and helping them to develop their capabilities, their capacity, their intelligence about doing business in the marketplace, and at the end of the day, helping them find and win business.
Okay, today we are, I've assembled these guys for a very particular reason. We're going to be dealing with social media Web 2.0 tools. Evan doesn't like the phrase social media, but that's okay, because in a way I agree with him. It doesn't mean that the other communications have, communication methods have gone away. It means that we've integrated a bunch of new stuff into them, and some things are morphing, some things are staying fairly stable, but we're going to start off with blogs. So, Evan, I know that you have some very particular thoughts on blogs as a thought leadership tool. Explain a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I think that before you start a blog, you need to understand who your audience is and why you're going to do a blog or initiate a blog, and you have to have a goal. Once you've identified, what the goal of the blog is, then you need to be a thought leader within that blog. In other words, don't just go out and promote your products, your services, and stand on your soapbox. Nobody wants to hear that. People are trying to look to gain insights into an industry and hear and exchange ideas. And so you want the blog to be engaging as well, so people provide comments. And, stay consistent. Make sure that you're consistently blogging. If you blog one time and it's like a white paper, and then you come back 3 months and, that's not the idea. The idea is, 400 to 600 words, short snippets. Hopefully people will respond to it. You get that engagement going, and which is important. If somebody comments on your blog, you should comment back. It's the idea of making things interactive. And like I said, as a thought leadership tool.
Okay. Jaime, you use a blog pretty effectively these days.
My blog's the Acquisition Corner, and I like to focus on federal acquisition and just topics in government contracting. Evan really hit the nail on the head when he says thought leadership, because that's really what blogging is about and how I do that. Because federal acquisition certainly is in the news several times a day, especially with these budgetary pressures, everything that we're under. And of course, this acquisition reform is, kind of really cemented under this administration, and hopefully that will continue. So there's not, there's plenty of information out there to talk about.
Well, you could say cemented as in cement shoes. And going.
Yeah, some of the decisions that are made, you know, still kind of, you know, I shake my head at times. But nonetheless, there's a real focus on, you know, being more efficient, more effective, being better stewards of taxpayer funding. I mean, all those kind of buzzwords, if you will. And that's really what I like to discuss with my audience. And for blogging, for me, you know, is kind of also cathartic because it gives me the opportunity to have a wider audience about some of the issues. And if anybody knows me, I'm certainly not shy with my opinions. Because this is a very important topic, because we're at a kind of a crossroads right now with how we manage government. And it's, and ultimately, anywhere you go, regardless of how any type of management or product service, it always comes down to some contract, you know, some contracting officer, some contracting specialist, and decisions that they make every day. I mean, it's that fundamental. So there's a lot of topics out there that need to be discussed, and this blog is a perfect opportunity to do that, to create that type of thought leadership. And that, and that's really what I'm about, what my firm is about, to show that, you know, we are thought leaders. We do understand this process. We do understand the pains out there. But more importantly, the blog is an opportunity to describe solutions and not just, you know, complain and things like that. And as Evan said, when comments are posted, it's very important to respond, because kind of a good news, bad news things with blogging is that the web provides a level of anonymity. So you kind of get the raw kind of comments. And in this environment, you know, it's very polarized. You know, there's, if you ever, back before govexec.com kind of rechanged its format, you should read some of the comments there. I mean, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, a lot of them were not productive and just
very unprofessional. They weren't adequately moderated, frankly.
Right. So, I mean, they changed that format to kind of, you know, make the conversation where I want it to be, which is productive and discuss solutions. And that's really what blogging is about for me and my company and how we've been successful in leveraging that.
Well, and Mark, like you, Jaime has no opinion, so it's great to see when he gets out there and injecting, you know, his thoughts, you know, on different topics. And he and I do a lot of tagging back and forth through some of the things that I talk on that are of interest to him and vice versa. But, you know, and blogging for me, and we were talking about this, you know, before the show, you know, it serves really a couple purposes. For me, it's a way for me to kind of gather insight into what the rest of the community is thinking about based on responses I get. I get some that are offline. I get some directly in response to the blog, whether it's posted on my page under the Chief Visionaries blog or one of the LinkedIn groups or something like that. So it's a great intelligence collection tool for me. And, you know, and along the lines of thought leadership, it's something that, you know, I've learned from you and others over the years. You know, it's something I don't take for granted. And when I found out or learned from a number of people that I guess I had gotten to a certain point where people actually listened to me, which is fairly intimidating, then it changes your perspective and you develop a different level of appreciation and respect for how you put information out. And so now what I try to do, and very much like Jaime, I offer up opinions on different topics, whether it's legislation, you know, acquisition related policy or procurement related policy, or just happenings in the government contracting community as a whole. And it gives me the opportunity, you know, some of the research I do before I write some of them is I'll reach out to folks, you know, like Jaime or you or, you know, any number of other folks and say, you know, what do you see happening here? What do you think is going on? And it gives me a way of putting information out there that kind of embodies more than sometimes than just what I'm thinking, but what seems to be at least kind of the tempo from a good section of the community.
Yeah. I had a problem with blogs early on, and on occasion I still do, you know, because some people are intent on proving the theory that, you know, you give an infinite number of monkeys an infinite number of typewriters and the sentence may occur. And in this case, it's a thought might occur because a lot of the stuff out there is simply regurgitated. It's not new. There's no new slant on
right,
it. It's,
right.
You know, it's me too. But I said it first.
But that you raise a good point, which is, and one of the things that we work with our clients on is, you know, we used to have a press list and we used to have an analyst list. Well, we now have a blogger list. We try to identify who the key bloggers are
yep.
that are actually providing insightful information, and we track them, and we make sure that our clients are following those bloggers and engaging with them. Because if you find the right folks, like a guy Timberlake, you know, talking about certain issues within the government in contracting, for example, we want to follow that. We want to be able to capture that knowledge. Our clients want to capture that knowledge. So I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is on the blog front is that our organization has a blog where we're providing, you know, tips on different things, right? You know, how to write a press release, or writing is not dead. And right. You know, it sparks lots of back and forth and discussion. But we also make sure that we've got a variety of people contributing to the blog. It's not just one person.
Right.
We have 5, 6, 7 people contributing to our blog. And then we'll even pull in experts and outside folks from the agency, from our firm, to be a guest blogger and bring them into the fold and get their opinions and so forth. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent point. I have one technology company that located a bunch of bloggers that influenced their particular niche.
Yep.
Now, these bloggers are not household names, but if you follow their particular niche, they probably have maybe 5-10,000 followers worldwide. But when they write about something, either positively or negatively, it's almost like Walter Mossberg, old
Wall Street Journal.
Journal, thank you. God, why couldn't I think of that? But, you know, when Mossberg wrote about something, you know, the stock would go up or down, or the company would grow or disappear.
Sure.
So the same thing applies. Everything you want to know about social media. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition. You can find him at theasbc.org. Evan Weissel of Wells & Weissel. You can find them at w2comm.com, w2com.com. And Jaime Gracia of Seville Government Consulting. What's the website?
Is www.sevillegovcon.com.
There you go. And that's what I have, Seville GovCon. I just didn't know it was sevillegovcon.com.
There you go.
all right. So on search engines, we have the three most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, it's been there for a while, YouTube. anybody here? I have a YouTube page, but frankly, it's kind of embarrassing.
I have a YouTube account, but I don't really use it. I mean, I've got a few videos out there from the Charity Bash from years past and, you know, things of that nature. The one we did for the Naval Academy grads, where we did the color guard. So, but don't really use it. I think more for anything right now is going and finding good Sesame Street videos for PIM. So,
well, let me give you an example from a company that I worked with a while back, Demco, Library Supplies Company, right? They have a video on how to use a literature display rack. And it's about, no crap. It's about 3.5 minutes long, and it's only had a couple of hundred views. But of those couple of hundred views, what percentage do you think are people who might actually purchase that?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can use video for virtually anything.
Right.
So it's interesting. You mentioned YouTube. YouTube is actually the number two search engine in the world right now.
Right, but the third most visited site.
It's the third most visited, but it's the number two search engine. So right. I think, you know, at the end of the day, every one of our clients is asking about video. No question about it.
Right.
I mean, you know, whether it's product videos, whether it's thought leadership videos and having your executives speak, you know, just a corporate video talking about the culture of your organization for recruitment. Video, I heard someone say that if a picture's worth 1,000 words, a video tells the whole story.
Nice.
Right? So I think that, you know, again, we're using, our clients are looking to use video more and more to engage as opposed to the 1,000 words. In fact, I've got some stats here on video that I thought were really interesting. It says, adding a video to your website makes your site 6 times more likely to convert a browser customer. And that's from Forrester Research.
Okay.
20% of web visitors will read the majority of text, while 80% will sit and watch the same content presented in a video.
Man.
And watch the entire video?
Right. And then the third, statistic that I thought was interesting is a company website is 50 times more likely to be ranked on the front page of Google if it contains video. So I think that, again, at the end of the day, there are a lot of ways to use video. There's a lot of statistics that are backing up why you should use video.
We should be videoing this show.
We could be videoing this show. I'm not sure anybody wants to see us. That's why we have a face for radio, right?
Absolutely.
That's the line, right?
That's why I'm
on that statement.
So anyways, I think, you know, our clients, from our perspective, what we're seeing our clients do, a lot of them are customer testimonials, product demonstrations that they can see how something is used and delivered and so forth. And again, the corporate video demonstrating the culture and just, 2 to 3 minutes of who we are and, why we do things, our vision and so forth.
I mean, I know I've made buying decisions based on video that were hosted on YouTube, but through a company website. I mean, literally I had our dishwasher went up. And I wanted to see if it was something that I could do myself before I bought the part, or what I call the Maytag repairman or whatever. Went online, saw the 3 minute video showing how to replace something, like a piece of cake, ordered the part, did it myself, done. So, I don't know if it made that company any more money or any less money. I mean, they got to sell me the part, but some other company lost out on a service deal with me too.
Yeah.
So it helped me in that respect.
And I also want to say on video, it's not just traditional video, but it's also, the word cartoon is maybe the right way, but being able to demonstrate a very technical product and being able to see it and kind of use charts and tie that into video, I think helps a lot of people better understand what some of these companies are trying to sell, especially in the technology space.
Right, absolutely. And that's exactly how I use video personally is, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I had rented some equipment and, you're reading the manual and, it's got the little pictures. I don't know what the heck any of that is. So I go to the YouTube channel for the manufacturer and there's a video of how to use the product. I'm like, oh, of course. Now I understand what this little design means in this manual. And that was very powerful because in 5 minutes, I was able to use this equipment. And, I have to admit that video, my YouTube channel is, I have to put in marks, is a little bit embarrassing. But for me, and to kind of integrate the training that I do in the federal acquisition space, video is very powerful because a wonderful example of it is the Khan Academy. And I saw a segment on 60 Minutes about this gentleman who is, MIT grad, Harvard, all this stuff. And his niece, I believe in Texas, was having trouble with algebra. So he created these YouTube training videos on algebra for her. Next thing you know, he's got a million page views on these little 5 minute segments on algebra and chemistry and astronomy and all these other things. And then he got funding from Bill Gates because Bill Gates mentioned it because his daughters were using it. So that, just to give an example of how that really kind of flowered for it, but that's kind of how I use it is because in the federal acquisition space, training is kind of, you go to class, you get the binder, you go back to the office, the binder goes on the shelf and never gets used again. But if you've got, what does this piece of an acquisition plan mean? Or how can I do better market research? You can go to a 10-minute video and how to use GSA Advantage. You can take them through the website. Here's how you can do a socioeconomic set-aside using GSA schedules and do simplified acquisition procedures to, one of Guy's big things, which I'm a big supporter of. And that's a very good integrated use of our training can be done for this market segment particularly, but for the end user, because that video is extremely powerful to drive the traffic, but also to drive the knowledge.
Okay. So video is definitely powerful. I love your stats, Evan. But we have kind of the flip side of that coin, and it's been around a little longer, and that's the podcast side. And the main use I've seen for podcasts is to take a thought leadership position, usually a white paper, and turn it into a podcast. But again, you have to have somebody who can articulate and speak well reading it, because you don't want, that guy who taught your class in college and he had the same notes that he'd been speaking from 40 years and he was as excited as you were. But are podcasts still viable, Ed?
I think they're still viable. I don't think they're as exciting as video. They're more cost effective. It's a way, like you said, to present in a verbal manner your thoughts and so forth. But one of the things that we've been doing with clients on the podcast front, well, there's a couple of things. We actually, in my organization, have a director of content. And one of the things that he does are what we call 5 minutes with. He may have done it with a couple of you in the room here. And so what we're building is a repository of content with industry thought leaders. And it's a 5 minute podcast. We call it 5 minutes with, and so that's been pretty effective from our end on the client end. And what we're trying to do with some of our clients is we talk about the press release and some of these other tools. Well, one of the options is to the press release shouldn't be more than 1 to 2 pages, right? But one of the things that we can do is embed a link to a podcast interviewing an executive about that topic or that announcement, and it gives it more context. Again, I wouldn't do it more than 5 minutes because I think people's attention spans don't last much longer than that, but it gives us a little bit more of an opportunity to maybe share some additional content that we couldn't write into the press release.
Well, and I think one of the things with podcasts right now that may give it just a little bit more versatility than video is the ability for folks to actually consume that information while they're driving, walking, or traveling. As opposed to, because if you're the person driving down the road, watching a video on your screen on your phone while you're driving, get on the other side of the road, get away from me, please. But so there's that one element, you know, that gives that versatility. But to your point though, there's a duration to it, and it's just like webinars. You can't really do a webinar for over a certain amount of time because you're going to lose people. Because they're disconnected from you, only that wire, you know, fiber or whatever it is. So 5 minutes has been what we've seen. And Mark and I have done stuff over the years that were the longer, you know, training things that he put together, but also a lot of the more impactful type of podcasts we wanted to do. And by the way, I'm going to steal slash politely borrow 5 minutes with or some variation of that because that's awesome. That's excellent, actually. That's a great concept. But being able to put something together like that and have a very specific, short, easy to consume, high impact dialogue. Right. You know, whether it's a conversation like this, you know, with a group or just one person, you know, articulating something, I think that's tremendous.
And I think podcasts are an effective tool to supplement information, not so much supplant it. Mm-hmm. Because I think podcasts can be very successful to kind of, like you said, to give it more context, the information that you're trying to present or distribute. So, for example, like I teach federal acquisition regulation, you know, kind of a FAR boot camp. Well, you know, if you need to sleep and you can't go to bed, yeah, read the FAR. It'll put you to bed, no problem. but like, you know, you're reading like FAR 16 about contract types. You know, I like to use podcasts, say, okay, here's the different types of contract types. But more importantly, here's why you should use them. And, you know, provide a little bit more context that the content just on paper is not providing you. So, you know, but like we also mentioned, the mobility is a great thing because this content could be used, you know, while you're at the gym, you know, while you're going to work, whatever. So, I mean, the mobility of it is great, but the context kind of, you know, building with the podcast, I think, can be effective. But for me, I see podcasts more of a supplement to material as opposed to just creating the material itself.
Cool. Yeah, I think I'd agree. And I think that on the podcast front, too, in terms of the thought leadership side, again, I'm going to keep pushing that issue. It's a way to get that your executives talking in an easy manner. In other words, it takes 5 minutes. We do 5 minutes. It takes 5 minutes. A blog, you know, it takes a lot hard. It's a lot harder to get folks to do blogs and write content and do these things. You sit down with you guy for 5 minutes. We can get a podcast done.
Exactly.
And it's up within the hour.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Jaime Gracia of Seville Government Consulting, Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition, and Evan Weissel of Wilson Weissel Communications. And we are talking about all things Web 2.0. Not all things. We're talking about things that actually work. So if you're here to listen about Pinterest, forget it doesn't float in this market. So we've covered blogs, videos, and podcasts, admittedly in a relatively brief time. Webinars. The fastest growing company in the government market, I'm pretty sure, is Carahsoft. They have grown their market share organically in 7 years to $1 billion. And for 3 years now, maybe 4 years now, at least three, they've been on the WashTech Top 100 contractor list.
I just want to drink the same water Craig's drinking. That's all.
Turn water into wine, whatever. But one of their major tools is webinars. If you go to the Cisco website and you look up webinars, you'll find literally thousands of them. There's over 1,000 webinars on Carahsoft's website, Carahsoft, Carahsoft.com. But these are remarkable tools. But before we get into any details, It's like everything else we've discussed. You can do a good one, or you can do a bad one. And we haven't really touched on that. But a bad blog is a bad blog. A bad video may go viral, but not for the reasons
for
you
the
want.
Right reasons.
Podcasts, you know, they aren't going to go viral. And people just won't listen to it
right.
if it's bad. Webinars, same thing. Evan, what's the role of webinars in an integrated marketing environment?
I would say on the webinar front, it's typically our clients are using them to talk about a certain issue or very specifically about a product. And this is a situation where they actually might stand up and talk about their product and have a customer with them and do something where they can go out and try and get prospective customers in to hear a case study or something like that. So our clients are doing webinars. I don't know how often they're doing them right now. Maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year for our clients. It seems like the number, maybe 1, 2 quarter on that front. A lot of times they'll partner with a publication. One of the things that I find is that if you don't have a good speaker, people will not listen to the webinar. And so there's a couple of things here. One is trying to get kind of that keynote-ish kind of person to go along with your executive. So you've got the company person, plus you've got kind of this industry person. You're talking about something. If it's a broader issue, obviously if it's a product issue, it's just the company folks. And then we've had very good success in terms of partnering with the different government publications, for example, on doing webinars. And the reason we do that is because they have a large audience that they can reach out to and promote and drive traffic to. So instead of having 10 or 20 people at the webinar, you might get 100 to 300 people at a webinar, which obviously is a better ROI. So
right. But, you know, when we were talking about blogs earlier, prior to the webcast, I shared with you, I drive traffic to my own articles, my own blogs, simply by posting everything I do in groups on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yep.
Guy, you guys do a few webinars.
We do. I mean, we have right now, I mean, we know we have a collection of educational programs that we do under the ASPC's government contracting. And the main reason for doing that is because we've got members that are located in 24 states and 4 countries. It wasn't necessarily practical for them to make the hop, skip, and to jump over to Tyson's Corner or Columbia, from Dubai or from Los Angeles. So we wanted to give kind of to expand that reach, give them that ability to be tied into what was going on, and that's been successful for us. But at the same time, I think there's a trade-off there where. You know, everything in this business is relationship driven and relationship based. So there's a lot of times where you'd rather have that touch, where you'd rather have them in the room with you and be able to have that collaboration, that immediate response and so forth. And you can get some of that, you know, from a webinar. And so there's that balance of, you know, do I bring in the building or do I do it over the web? And if the alternative is not having them at all, then I'm going to do the webinar. And because there's also that aspect of, you know, constrained schedules. Nobody has time for anything anymore. And so if you can put that out there as a webinar, as a live one, and especially if you record it and make it something that can be repurposed, then you've created more opportunities for yourself to get that information out there, depending on what the point is.
You must be doing.
Oh, I love webinars. Love them. Because for me, they kind of create a very fluid, interactive environment for basically everything that we've talked about. I mean, you can write a good blog and you can have a comment section, but it's still static. I mean, you can do some podcasts, but nonetheless, they're still static. But with a webinar, you have that interactivity with the audience, I think, is important. And it really establishes, for me, that thought leadership that you've developed with these other tools and these other techniques. So I know, for example, you know, I'll be reading a good blog. Oh, this guy, you know, is really good. I'll listen maybe a podcast. But the webinar, you know, is really where the rubber hits the road because you start asking some questions. You're really into the content. And then I know I've had a couple experiences where I'm just at the end, I'm like, man, this guy has no idea what the heck he's talking about. But, you know, those webinars really give you the
that
opportunity.
That wasn't me, was it?
No, it's not. No names to protect the innocent, not you. But I haven't gotten that feedback, luckily. Quite the opposite, thankfully. But the webinar is really a great opportunity to create that fluid environment to really establish yourself as a thought leader in whatever particular field you're doing and establish your company and your products and your services. So I think webinars are a fantastic, important tool to really differentiate your products and services so you can create that attention to the client base out there and, of course, create that audience.
One of the ones that most of us have participated in before, I think the folks at GovWin have a pretty good handle on leveraging, you know, webinars to, you know, for their benefit. Obviously, I think the end game is to create more interest in their community and in the products that their company offers. But they're putting out some good information. And we've all been a part of those and just different sessions they do. But it creates, I mean, we were watching one time when people were logging on, I think got to like 400 or 500 folks on one of the webinars, and they're coming in from all over the place. So it does give you that reach. It's that ability to touch folks that you may not ordinarily be able to get to, someone that may not make the trip, even if they're around the corner from you, may not want to be in the building, per se. Mm-hmm. They want to get a little distance-based touch to kind of check you out before they come and make the full commitment.
Yeah, and if you're in the government market, I mean, webinars, I think, are an important tool for you because with all these budgetary pressures, travel budgets are slashed. So, you know, conferences are going away. Look at what's happening at GSA, right? I mean, that's just kind of going across the board. So webinars are a great tool to reach a bigger audience, especially in this government market.
So just a tactical issue with webinars, which is make sure you schedule it so that the East Coast and the West Coast are the audience that you're trying to reach.
Yeah.
If you do it at 8 a.m. on the East Coast, you're not getting anybody on the West Coast. So typically you'll see, you know, folks do it at 2 in the afternoon.
Right,
East Coast time or 1 o'clock to make sure you get the audience there.
To a greater or lesser degree, we all consult with individual clients. When I'm doing an audit of a marketing program for a company or more likely doing LinkedIn training for a company, I always ask if they have an internal webinar platform so we can record it live, but they can go back to it again and again. Same thing with my marketing audits. You know, you're not going to catch everything on the first pass. Record it, and we'll record it in, you know, 60 to 90 minute chunks, never more than 90 minutes at a time because people will be bored out of their minds. But it gives them the ability to take what they pay me and use it again and again, rather than just, you know, getting the notebook at the end and you know, again, one more shelf item.
Right.
So who's going to go back to it?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Where is that annoying guy's stuff anyway? but webinars over the last 24 months or so have become truly an integral part of this community.
Well, you've got more agencies using them now, right? I mean, for different different things, and you know, I'm one of those folks that's still, you know, more neophyte than veteran in that area of trying to really leverage them well. But you know, I'm always kind of caught with, okay, what is the right amount of time for a webinar and when do you get to being too long? And there are some government agencies who, for all the right reasons, had very, very long webinars, presentations that were either in as a replacement for an actual industry day or something of that nature. And so on the one hand, again, it's the opportunity to get information out to the masses, where people can't necessarily travel in for it or the agency budget can't support bringing them in. So that's you know, there's an exchange, you know, you're losing on one side, gaining on the other. So
cool. All right, you're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We've done blogs, videos, podcasts, webinars. That leaves social networking, which is coming up after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today, our guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition, Evan Weissel of Wilson Weissel Communications, and Jaime Gracia of Seville Government Consulting. Gentlemen, the moose on this plate, from my perspective, is social networking. And as pretty much everybody in the government community who's on LinkedIn knows, I love LinkedIn tremendously. But I don't really want to start there. Facebook, is there still a significant play in the government contracting field?
I want to just say one comment about social networks before we even jump into Facebook, which is, again, we have a lot of clients that are using social networks, but I think the biggest issue with social networks, especially in the business-to-business, business-to-government technology play that we're in, is, you know, they just want to be on them. But there's not a, but they don't know why they want to be on them. They want to be on them because everybody else is on them. And I think that that's the biggest problem right now.
Kind of like getting the GSA schedule.
People don't realize. Well, exactly right. People don't realize the time and investment that it takes to be on these networks. And so, a lot of people are getting sucked into this world without any type of business plan behind it. And I think, so that's the comment I want to make about social networks before we get into specifics.
Have you been reading the notes for my new book?
Not yet, but I will. But Facebook. We had a good conversation about Facebook, if we're going to start with that, which is, it's a great social network. It's great for voyeurism, in my opinion. I think that a lot of people use it more for a personal perspective than anything else. I think there is that blend of crossover where a lot of people do have the personal and the business, and it gets a little bit kind of back and forth.
It gets a little muddy sometimes.
Exactly. But, I go to Facebook every day. I can't lie. I keep up with my family members. I keep up with colleagues. And so I get a lot of insight out of Facebook from a personal level, and maybe on what events are going on in town and what people are seeing and doing. Mm-hmm. But from a purely business sense, as Guy just said, clients are using it from a business perspective, maybe to promote an event, and then people can comment on how the event went and put pictures up there and so forth. But on the Facebook side, that's about all I'm seeing in terms of, and I'm sure there's lots of uses.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not a proponent either way. I mean, Facebook started off as really a personal platform for me, and it progressed into being a personal professional platform for me. And the difference between how I was using LinkedIn and using Facebook is, my general rule of thumb was, if I didn't actually know you, I wouldn't connect with you on Facebook.
Right.
Hands down. If you were just someone that I, that wanted to connect with me, like on LinkedIn, I'm a lot more liberal in how I connect to people there. I'll check you out real quick. If you're a referral from Mark or I'm, or someone like that, I'll connect with you because they probably did their homework on you already. And there's probably a purpose to having that connection. Facebook, I have 10 times more connections on LinkedIn than I have on Facebook. I'll say it that way. Mainly because it is personal, but some business aspect to it. So, but again, we have, the company page out there, do the Chief Visionary blog, to do events, to do comments back and forth with different folks. We have the Holiday Charity Bash page out there to put the photos up so anybody can get access to them, so they can see what they look like in the photo booth last year, at the event, that kind of thing. So it works out well. So there's a social business aspect to it.
You're absolutely right. I mean, same deal, right? When we go out to events, we post pictures up to our Facebook page. People can see the culture, our culture.
Absolutely.
Good recruitment tool, I guess, is another good option
absolutely.
For Facebook. So yeah, absolutely agree.
I see Facebook as a business-to-business tool. I think business-to-government is a little bit tricky, just because of the way Facebook is being used. Because again, Facebook is still very much a social person to person, not so much person organization. I think that's really the hindrance there for business to government. Business to business, I think there's a lot of utility because companies can advertise, specials, and they can advertise and use that kind of, one-way communications. And every agency is on Facebook, putting that information out there. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the information that people need as far as the agency for business development or intelligence, for that matter, they're going to go to the website of the agency. So there's new newsletters that agencies have.
Their blogs,
right? Twitter and things like that. But Facebook, I think, is a very difficult business to government type of entity. I use Facebook kind of personally and professionally, mostly personal because, it's Yankee season. So I basically put everything about the Yankees on there. My cousins my nephews in town, things like that. It's more of a personal thing. I just don't really see Facebook as a huge part of an integrated marketing approach in the federal government space, because I think LinkedIn and Twitter, and we'll talk about that, is probably a more effective tool for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. If there's a specific campaign, even in the government, I think Facebook can be a viable tool. So, and again, a good example, we do a charity event called Run Geek Run, which happens to be September 15th in West Potomac Park, RunGeekRun.net. It's a 5-mile race. We've got a page for that. And it has all the pictures from past races. It has
exactly,
you know, why we're doing this. And it's a great place. So Facebook, in that circumstance, absolutely ideal for what we're trying to accomplish.
And because it's something like our charity bash, because it's something that you're typically appealing to, while there may be a business-related purpose to it, it's a more personal endeavor for folks when they see that. If they're a runner, that's probably a personal pursuit, no pun intended, of what they're doing. And so, yeah, I think it's a perfect tie-in. And again, for the charity bash, you know, we've had folks, you know, from the media as well as from the different government agencies who are on Facebook because they're personal accounts. I mean, you may know that they're a government official, but it's a personal thing for them. And so the folks that I'm connected to that way, you know, again, it's somebody I know. And so that's kind of where I draw the line.
Right. Well, here's the bottom line for me. Fortune 1000 is maybe on Facebook. I know they're on LinkedIn.
Right.
In force.
Right.
The Watch Tech Top 100 are there in force. The Fast 50, as near as I can tell, are all there in force. The federal agencies are there by the thousands.
Yep.
And the activity in the groups, government-facing groups, contracting-facing groups,
yep,
schedule-facing groups.
The program groups are out there. I mean, I just connected with a program manager from one of the DOD agencies the other day. I mean, you know, everyone and their brother, quite honestly, seems to be out there across the board. And so kind of changing gears a bit and talking about LinkedIn, LinkedIn is a tremendous business tool. For lots of reasons, you know, for the visibility you can get from it, from the research and the investigative aspect of it, to be able to go out there and identify how you know someone, or how you, you know, how if I know that Evan is connected to someone and it's a close connection of his, the likelihood that he can probably open that door for me is pretty great. Mm-hmm. And I'll always take that before making a cold call.
Right. Well, one of the reasons I do a lot of coaching on LinkedIn for individuals and companies ties into something Evan said earlier. LinkedIn is a natural platform for building a thought leadership position.
No question.
So
LinkedIn is, I use LinkedIn for business more than any other tool out there myself. I'm on LinkedIn several times a day for the various reasons both of you have just mentioned. In particular, what I do like, and I know that you're the LinkedIn guru, but I like the groups.
Yep.
Our clients are all over the map in different verticals and in different industries, from the cruise line industry to fleet management to construction.
1.4 million groups.
Right. So I can identify by putting in keywords some key groups that allow me to actually monitor activity and conversations and dialogue within these groups that actually help me then go to my client going, hey, I just saw this in a discussion in LinkedIn. You all might want to be aware of this. It's helped us immensely.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, one of the years that you and I early on were in, sorry, Jaime, but when they rolled out the Q&A feature, and, you know, we started getting the different groups, the different categories of topics coming up. And I think you and I were like, you know, one and two flip-flopped in six different categories related to government contracting for a long time there. And it was perfect from a thought leadership standpoint to be able to go out there and not do an ad for, you know, join the American Small Business Coalition to offer a very specific insight. Somebody would ask a question, you give an honest answer to the best of your ability, and then all of a sudden you're getting these points because they picked your answer as the best answer.
Right.
And all of a sudden your ranking starts going up. And I mean, you can't buy that advertising. Right. I think you can now, but you couldn't then.
Right. Groups on LinkedIn, I think, are the most important tool, certainly for us, because exactly, you build that thought leadership there. I mean, I don't even go to the Q&A, quite honestly, anymore.
I
abandoned it. I haven't been there in a long time. It doesn't make any sense because the groups are so powerful now because for my market segmentation, exactly. You get that focus. So you join the groups that are in your field, that are in your product category, and then you can post information on there. You can read what's being posted on there. You can see what your competitors are doing. But more importantly, you can see exactly what your clients are doing and your prospects. And that's really the great tool
for it. And your competition.
Absolutely. Yep. No doubt about it. I mean, that's really where you build the thought leadership. You know, you post your information on those groups. You comment on those groups. And then you actively participate in those groups, which is the important thing. So you can join, you know, hundreds of groups. I mean, I think there's a limit.
50.
50? Okay.
Yep.
So, I mean, but okay, you got your 50 groups. Now what? You know, what are you doing in those groups? Are you active in all 50? You know, maybe. If you are, that's great. But again, that goes back to Evan's point, is that you have to have a strategy and a plan to effectively use these tools. And certainly on LinkedIn, I mean, there's probably a very wide category for anything under the sun that you do. So you have to be very, very strategic in the groups that you are active in so that you can actually build that thought leadership and kind of build your presence on LinkedIn so people actively seek you out. And that's exactly how we use LinkedIn, because Guy had mentioned it. I'm in the same boat. You know, people come to me, say, hey, I want to connect with you. You know, I saw your article. You know, I'd like to talk to you about, you know, this opportunity that we have. And that's really how we've been able to use LinkedIn successfully.
Absolutely.
And, unfortunately, we are out of time. But what I want is to get you three guys back together so we can take a deep dive into LinkedIn. We haven't even discussed Twitter or GovLoop yet. So a couple of weeks down the road, we'll do all things social networking.
And just with all these topics that we've discussed, you know, the first place people still go is a website.
Absolutely.
Make sure that people can find these different platforms easily right on the homepage.
That's right.
Don't hide them, because I think a lot of people are missing the boat on that as well. So I think that's an important
make it easy
comment.
To find you.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I'd like to thank Guy, Evan, and Jamie for joining me today. This is not my day job. If your company needs to make certain your marketing program is paying dividends, consider having me audit your program. If you need help on LinkedIn, definitely look me up. You can find me all over LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.